Hey, my friend, I'm glad you're back. This is Dr. Lee Warren, and today we're going to talk about managing your money during the mayhem. This is a good conversation we're about to have with a financial expert from the Boerne, Texas, San Antonio, Texas area. Carl Eggers is a financial expert. He's a financial planner and money manager, has run his own firm for a long time, started buying stocks when he was a teenager, and recently sold his business to another or merged his business with another company there in the Boerne area. And I just asked Carl to come onto the show because this is a obviously scary time for everybody. And I pray that you're working, that your job is secure and all those things. But for the folks that are still earning income right now, the big question that a lot of them have is, what's happening with my retirement? What's happening with my investments? And obviously, as the market has been fluctuating so much, there's a lot of concern with, especially if you're older and you've got a fixed income based on investments that you've made when you were in your working years. There's a lot of concern about what's happening and what the future looks like. And I just thought Carl could bring some perspective on what we ought to be thinking about, bring some encouragement about the state of our markets, and maybe give you some ideas about what you ought to be doing or not doing to manage your money during this crazy time. So we're going to get into a great conversation with Carl Eggers about how to handle our money during the mayhem. And as always, we're going to start today. Hey, this is the Dr. Lee Warren Podcast. We are bringing you ideas to help change your mind so you can change your life. My show is all about neuroscience, the power of your mind, faith, the power of your spirit, and good old common sense to help you live a healthier, better, happier life. Listen, you can go to wleewarrenmd.com for my newsletter, my podcast, my books, everything about me. If you want to connect, I'm at Dr. Lee Warren on Instagram and Twitter. Lisa is at Lisa D. Warren on Instagram and Twitter, and we love to connect with folks from all over the world. Hey, go to the service that you use to listen to podcasts and subscribe to the show so you don't miss any episodes. If you have a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher, that would help too, because that ratings and reviews really do help other people find the show. We're going to get into a conversation with financial expert Carl Eggers this morning, and we are going to learn to manage our money during the mayhem. So let's get after it. Okay, folks, we're back. I've got Carl Eggers here, financial expert, and just want to give you some opportunity to talk about managing your money during the mayhem. Carl, thanks for your time with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
That's great. And you're in the San Antonio area, right?
I am. I'm in a little hill country town just outside of San Antonio, Texas, about 20 or 30 miles.
Is that Boerne?
It is Boerne. That's correct.
Yeah, my sister-in-law.
Not spelled Boerne, but yeah. B-O-E-R-N-E.
That's right. Carl, tell us a little bit about yourself and what your and your background and your work.
Yeah, well, I started trading stocks when I was 14 years old, so I kind of knew this was what I wanted to do. I didn't really know the shape that it would take over my career, but right out of college, finance degree, specialization in financial planning, went to work at Fidelity Investments for a very brief amount of time, and then left and went and worked for a registered investment advisor. And I've stayed in that field this whole time. And that was in 1996 that I started as a financial advisor and have continued and started my own company in 2010 and then merged/sold to another firm in 2019, in May 1st of 2019. So we're coming up on a year. So I merged with a firm called Covenant and essentially was looking for more infrastructure. I was a growing firm, but decided, hey, there's things I like to do being a sole business owner and things I don't like to do. And so now I'm getting to focus on public education more and really just managing my clients' assets as opposed to doing all the day-to-day things that it takes to run your own business.
Right. And you've been podcasting really for a long time, which means if you've been podcasting for about 10 years, right? Which means you were really on the front edge of that. And so you've used your sort of tech knowledge to help people understand and learn more about money, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a overused term, but I really have always felt like I was a liaison between Wall Street and the average listener out there who's just trying to make some of these financial decisions, whether it's with their investments, whether it's with when to take Social Security, to do Roth conversions, all these decisions that everybody has to make.
Right.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of information flowing down. I always use the analogy, I do not like to shop for clothes. Anybody in my family will tell me that. So when somebody brings me clothes, my wife says, I found a shirt for you. I say, great. Yeah. And I'm like, it's too much. There's too much out there. And I don't know how to narrow it down. And I feel like a lot of people may feel that same way when it comes to investments. We have our phones dinging. We have the internet. Obviously, we have television, radio, podcasting now, which is growing exponentially. So when you put all that together, there's a lot of information. There's a lot of misinformation. So I try to filter out and say, in my podcast is typically what moved the markets this past week that's really going to impact people, what may move it next week, and then filter through that noise and say, what are some practical things people can do? And so I don't try to give advice to anybody because I don't know who's on the other end listening all the time, but just try to put it into plain English, frankly.
Right. I love your show, and we'll put links up, of course, to all your ways that people can connect with you. But the reason I asked you, Carl, to be on the show today we're obviously in a really weird time, right? This sort of global event. I talked with a guest last week about the fact that I can't think of another time in my lifetime. I'm 51 years old. I can't think of a time when everybody on the planet was thinking about the same thing at the same time. Like every economy, every government, every society, every church, every religion, every doctor, we're all thinking about the same thing right now, this COVID-19 business. And so because of that, we're all in this kind of boat of dealing with the same set of emotions and fears. And one of those fears that I keep hearing people talk about is related to money and the economy and all of that. So I'm hearing from a lot of people around the world that they're terrified, really, because they don't know what the future holds in terms of their finances. So maybe the first question I would have for you is, what do you feel like the next month, 2 months, 3 months is going to look like financially on a global scale for economies? And then we'll talk about individuals later, maybe.
You know, there's always the question on an economy and the stock market, but let's talk about the economy. That is it going to be a V? Meaning we go back to where we were in pretty short order.
Right.
Is it going to be an L where it doesn't come back?
Yeah.
Or is it going to be a U? And I think most people feel like it's going to look like a check mark or a U to some extent, because we know on the other side of this, I was at Home Depot this past weekend, as a matter of fact, and it's still crowded. It's still packed because people probably feel safe going in there because you're rarely right next to somebody.
Right.
But going to a movie, going out to dinner, going in an Uber even, those are going to be some things that are going to take time. Now, I won't say those won't come back because they will. I think if we look at 9/11, how many people back then said, I'm never going to fly again?
Yeah.
And yet they did. It just took some time. And eventually we got back up to where we didn't even think about that. Now, security changed.
Right.
Right. And so yeah. I think we're going to see something like that going forward. I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of money, and this is an investing opportunity as well, tremendous amount of money thrown in the health sciences, whether it's hospitals being built. We're going to be overstocked with masks and gowns
and ventilators,
ICU, yeah. Beds and ventilators and respirators. So there's an opportunity there. But there's no question. Some of these things we kind of take for granted. We're going to have a bunch of germaphobes on the other side of this, and maybe deservedly so for a while, but that's what it's going to look like. We're not going to be shaking hands for a while. We're not going to be wanting to go out to eat.
That's
so
right.
Those things will take longer to come back. Whereas going to the office, going to the Home Depots of the world, doing some of the things we did before, I think that will come back very quickly.
Right.
It's just, again, are people going to travel via a car or an airplane in the short run? We're probably going to opt for a car.
Right. That's right. So how do you see this affecting individuals and their finances, and maybe some advice about what people ought to be doing or not doing right now?
You know, I've always said that making wholesale changes during times like these, there is a fork in the road right now, that if you, the decisions you're making now and in the past week or two can literally impact your retirement in a major way. It can help you or it can hurt you.
Yeah.
And so I'm not one to say every dip is a buying opportunity. I'm also not saying we know it's going to go down further and therefore we should be raising a bunch of cash and sitting in the money market. It's somewhere in between. And for most clients, you should have a fairly balanced portfolio coming into this, and it should be the same coming out of that. Now, here's what's interesting is that during this sell-off, the, the stock market has always been the aggressive side and the bond market has always been the more conservative side.
Yeah.
And people kind of feel like, hey, if I own a little bit of both of those, I'm okay. Well, the bond market got hit very hard. So the diversification that most people have enjoyed the last few years really didn't help you. Real estate went down, gold went down, stocks went down, bonds went down. For those that are into cryptocurrencies, they went down.
Yeah.
So diversification didn't help you. What helped you was having some money in the money market, frankly.
Yep.
However, as we speak, a lot of those things have bounced back fairly significantly, but there are other things outside of stocks and bonds to invest in, whether it's commercial real estate, whether you do some type of lending, whether you own, there's funds out there that are designed to actually benefit from volatility.
Yeah.
And so those are things that you can diversify into. But again, you kind of had to have that body armor suit on going into this. You can't put it on now and expect that you're going to be able to fix things in the past. But really, I think those major decisions people make, which is, hey, I'm never going back into X, Y, or Z, or I'm going to own 90% bonds for the rest of my life because that stock market's too volatile. Those are the decisions that can really impact literally your retirement and how much you can afford to live off of.
That's right. Now, this is a really basic thing I'm going to get you to talk about here, but there's going to be some listeners out there who aren't very savvy in terms of finances. And I overheard a healthcare worker the other day, a nurse, who's a smart person, but obviously not real educated in finance, made a comment that, well, my mom lost 80% of her money over the last 3 days. And so she needs to sell everything to hold on to the last of it. Now, obviously, both of you and I are smiling. People won't see this video, but explain just on a really basic level, explain to people, like, when did they actually lose their money as opposed to what it looks like on paper and what they ought not to do when the market really has taken a dive that they weren't prepared for?
Well, let's be clear about a couple of things. Number one, the stock market fell roughly 50% during the dot-com bubble. It fell roughly 50% during the financial crisis.
The stock market. This is not the first time this has happened, right?
This is not the first time. And by the way, so far, this has not been as bad as that either. The stock market, depending on which index you looked at, fell somewhere between 30 to 40%. What made it a little different was how fast that happened. So if somebody says, I lost 80%, number one, I would ask, did you sell? Which is, I think, where you were going with that.
Yeah.
Which, of course, if you own an asset, whether it's a rent house or a stock, until you sell it, it's just a change in value, just like your home's changing in value. Now, having said all of that, the other thing is, if somebody fell 80% when the rest of the market fell 30 to 40% during that time, that means that, number one, they had 100% of their money in stocks.
Yeah.
And number two, it wasn't just the market, meaning a mutual fund or an index or something like that. They may have owned a handful of stocks that were very aggressive. For example, in the energy space, may have fallen 70 or 80% for stocks.
Right.
So the content of what you have in your portfolio would have been vastly more aggressive than, because most people did not lose that much.
And frankly, should have been.
If you had stocks and bonds or you were diversified, probably at your worst, you may have been down somewhere around 20%. And of course, it's bounced since then a little bit. But so that would be what I would say to that person is, I would really like to see what's in that portfolio. And also, if that is somebody that is older and didn't know they were taking that kind of risk, you have a whole other set of issues. Who was advising that person, or were they getting advised?
Right. I may have been using hyperbole when I said 80%. I don't know if that's exactly what she said, but the point was, you haven't actually lost anything until you sell it. And if you sell it at the bottom, then you really did lose that money, right? But if you can just give us some encouragement, maybe what I always tell people is that I think, from my perspective as a doctor, I'm a brain surgeon, but I'm not a financial analyst. But just looking at history, I don't know that there's a more successful financial track record in the world's history than the United States stock market over the last several hundred years anyway, right? So,
well, people need to understand that when you're investing in the stock market, this isn't fuddy-duddy money. You are actually investing in companies.
That's right.
And whether you do them individually or as a basket, that is up to you, and there's pros and cons of that. But I will give you one interesting stat. From the peak and this is going to be rough numbers, but from the peak of 2007, before the market fell, remember I told you it fell about 55% yeah. from high to low back in 2007, 2008, 2009. If you would have invested at the very top in 2007, you picked the worst time to invest and you rode it all the way down 55%. You didn't sell, to your point. Before we just had this sell-off here, you still would have averaged about 6.5% per year. The stock market more than doubled during that time. So that's including you dropping. Now, for most of us that have 401ks and so forth, we are adding, which is another great benefit, or rebalancing, yeah. which is another thing we can talk about. So to your point, when you sell, that's when it becomes permanent.
Right.
And a lot of people do that. It's just human. Look, when the markets are going down, my human reaction is to cut and run as well. And I've been doing this my whole life, and that's still my inclination. But my experience tells me, you know what? This has actually been a buying opportunity for the long term. So at the end of the day, Lee, what it's really about is, when does somebody need those dollars to use?
That's right.
So if somebody's 100% stocks, whether it's a mutual fund or an exchange traded fund or a basket of the best blue chips, if they were forced to sell 2 weeks ago because they literally needed to make a car payment or a house payment, they're living off their account, that's why you don't have 100% stocks. That's right. The problem. So for a young person, this is the best thing that could have happened to you. If you're somebody that's in your 30s, 40s, 50s, then you're a little concerned, but you still have been around enough to see that, you know what, usually I benefit from taking advantage of this. If you're somebody that's in your 70s or 80s, you're watching your portfolio go down too much, it's probably because you didn't have the right allocation coming into it.
That's right. So I think a good thing to talk about next may be when this is all over with and when things start to turn around, obviously buying opportunity, you've used that phrase a few times. So folks, what that means is that if you're looking to invest some money in the market, you obviously would like to do that when things are as cheap as they can be. And so how do you figure out timing along those lines? And then what do you think about when that might start to play out, when it might start to actually look like a real buying opportunity for folks out there?
Yeah, I think it's real easy. And we've seen this before. There's a few things that are very different about the sell-off. There's a lot of things that are not, that the behavioral side is not. Everybody acts the same way during times like these.
That's right.
The other thing that's very similar, if you go back to 2008, go back to the dot-com bubble, there's plenty of what they call bear market rallies, meaning the market's in a downtrend mm-hmm. and it has violent upswings, and it makes people think the worst is over. And that could be where we are right now, frankly. Having said that, though, I think we're at the point in the market right now as we're doing this where there's a fork in the road. The bad companies are going to stop going up, and the good companies are going to probably continue going up. Whereas right. what you saw when this first started was everything was going down. And the reason why is because there are forced sellers. Remember, when you own a mutual fund or an index fund, when somebody hits the sell button, they're not saying, I don't want Apple to go down, but I want Verizon to go down, or whatever combination.
Right.
All those stocks are being sold, and mutual funds and exchange traded funds are so popular nowadays that sometimes that's driving the individual companies. Back in the 30s and 40s, people were buying individual companies more than they were buying baskets. Now it's the opposite. So I think the proliferation of ETFs and mutual funds in the last 30 years has really driven some of the volatility we're seeing now. A lot of listeners probably know, if you look in your 401k, if you're listening right now, go in your 401k, one of your options is probably going to be some type of target date fund. Some of them call them life cycle funds or target date funds, where they have a date. And the idea is to make it very simple. If I retire in 2055 or 2060, I'll just pick that fund. And as I get closer to retirement, it gets more and more conservative.
Right.
Very easy to use. All that really is, though, Lee, is a fund of funds. It's a basket of other mutual funds.
That's right.
And it's meant to make it simple, and it does. However, when people hit click the sell button because they're scared of the market, you can imagine the trickle-down effect. All those funds have to sell stocks inside, and it just snowballs on itself. So I think that's why the sell-off happened so fast. And then to your point earlier about everybody's worried about the same thing, we've never seen, even going back to the Great Depression, we've never seen a time when the demand side of the economy was turned off, literally
right.
turned
that's
off.
Right.
And so another reason the market fell the way it did was because we're buying profits of companies. That's what we're buying, right?
I mentioned
that earlier. Well, can you tell me what a particular restaurant chain or an airline is going to earn or lose in 2020? It is impossible to know until they begin to say, I tell you what, we are going to be back online May 1st. Let's hypothetically say it's May 1st, and we're going to start allowing people to go on airplanes again. Then they will start saying, okay, we're at 25% capacity. Now the analysts can start figuring out and modeling how much that company may make or lose, and then you can value the company.
But without
knowing that, how do you know? And so that's another reason why the stock market sells so fast, because we have no idea what the profits of the companies are going to be. And in fact, in the last week or so, you've seen several companies, what they call remove their guidance. In other words, they usually tell Wall Street in advance, this is about what we think we're going to make in profit. And that helps us as investors decide, do we want to buy or sell that stock? Right now they're saying, we can't tell you that, so we're going to remove our guidance.
Right.
Well, does that make you confident as an investor? Probably not. So you're selling the stock. That's why part of this is happening.
Right. And then there's this collective fear that everybody has. So a lot of folks will relentlessly watch the market numbers. I mean, you can't avoid it. You turn on the news to see what's going on, and there's a ticker down there that's telling you red or green, you know, what's happening with the market all the time. And if you don't have a really solid understanding of what all this is about, you start seeing those red numbers and you want to sell. I mean, you want to get as much out of that as you can, right, psychologically. And I think that starts to snowball, and that's why we see these big movements like that.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And you know, the common Joe who wasn't watching this before is watching it now. And, you know, in the last, really since the financial crisis, we have a lot of new investors.
Right.
Remember, the financial crisis was, you know, what, 12 years ago now.
Yep.
And so because of that, even if you were invested in the market, let's say you were 30 years old, now you're 42 years old and you have more significant money, not only because you earn more, but because the market's gone up.
Yeah.
So now you care more.
That's right.
So there's a lot of people who have seen dips, 10, 15% drops, even 20% drops during this bull market. A lot of people forget that. But every one of them has been a V, right?
Yeah.
You wait a couple of months and it goes back up. And, you know, and so a lot of people were kind of duped into thinking that's how the market works. And while the last few weeks has been unusual, it may be more normal than not, because of the fact that there's going to be companies that are good and ones that are bad. There's going to be mutual funds that are good, some that are bad. In other words, investing isn't always easy.
Right.
It has been the last few years. And I think it's lulled people to sleep into thinking, well, I can just make 8 to 10% a year by putting my money in the market with very little risk.
Right.
And you will make 8 to 10% a year probably over the long term if you're in stocks. But to get that, and the reason you get paid a premium is because you have to put up like times like these where it's gut wrenching. It really
that's
is.
Right. So that's why there's some wisdom into ideas like dollar cost averaging, right? Where you're maybe tell us what that is, just so we don't throw a term out there that's obscure.
Yeah, if just to use a simple example, somebody has $25,000 and they say, should I put it all in today or should I put it in a little at a time? Well, you know, there's an argument to be made either way, but generally speaking, in 401k, what you're doing is what's called dollar cost averaging, which is you're adding to your investment in a systematic fashion. And so think about it, the dollars you're putting in there in your paycheck today, you're getting to buy something 20 to 25% cheaper than literally a month ago.
Yeah.
Now, if you were intervening in that, you'd probably say, hold on, I don't want to put any more in, because that's our human reaction.
Right.
That's the beauty of 401ks and any kind of systematic dollar cost averaging program, is that you're just letting it go on autopilot. And so every paycheck, every 2 weeks, it's going in there. And those new dollars are buying very, very cheap right now.
Sure.
And over time, what happens is if you look at your average cost, it's coming down, 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 down.
Sure.
So you're not putting all your money in at one time. And it definitely smooths out the returns. It's a disciplined approach, and it forces you to do what naturally you wouldn't want to do. Naturally, you don't want to buy right now.
Right.
You want to buy when the market's at a high, because that makes us feel good. But it's the stock market is rare in the sense that it's the only place on earth that I've seen where consumers are willing and wanting to pay a premium for something. You know, when we go to the department store, we want a 20 to 25% discount. We say that's a good value.
That's right.
In the stock market, we run away from those times. Yeah. For some reason.
Which is the opposite of what we should do.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's right. So one question that I have gotten a little bit of, I've heard from a few people about is stuff like, well, should I be buying, should I be holding cash? Should I be buying gold, silver, you know, physical assets? Should I be buying cryptocurrencies? Like, give us a little bit of your thoughts on things other than stocks and bonds and real estate right now.
Yeah, you know, I it's a good question. And I had even my mother recently say, hey, should I be buying gold? And I said, well, why are you asking now? Well, because I saw the guy that used to be on
the commercial. Yeah.
I saw the guy used to be on Knott's Landing on their
commercial.
And he seems like a trustworthy gray haired individual. And surely he wouldn't lie to me. And I said, well, number one, he's a paid advertiser. And number two, if the gold's so great, why are they selling it to you? Why are we not getting those commercials for stocks? Gold can play a part in a portfolio. And the reason why is because it is a, it's something that doesn't move the same direction all the time. Having said that, if you think about Warren Buffett, who most people would agree is the best investor of our lifetime, I was going to say our generation, but he's not in our generation. And I've had the privilege of meeting him, and he doesn't like gold because he says, what does it pay you any dividends? Does it pay you any cash flow? Does it do anything? And the answer is no. It's just something that everybody's agreed upon that it's shiny, and therefore we should value it. Right. But at the end of the day, if you look at where gold was in 2012, compared to what it is now, it's quite a bit lower.
Yeah.
If you look at the stock market, it's quite a bit higher. So I'm not saying that people shouldn't own it at times, but to think it's going to be the silver bullet, not at all. In fact, I always tell people, look, if you're so worried about money and if money's even going to be worth anything in the future, you should probably be growing your own food.
That's right.
And have a surplus of water, because that's what people will want. They will not want your bars of gold. And it's always been said to me that, and this is true, gold is like when you go to buy it, it's the Mona Lisa. And then when you go to sell it back, they weigh it.
Yeah.
It's a huge spread, right? It's the greatest thing ever when they're selling it to you. And then when we say, hey, I don't want this anymore, they say, well, we don't want that either. And so gold has this, for some reason, has an allure to it that people think it's the saving grace, and it's not. Has it performed differently than the stock market during this corona outbreak? It has, and it's held up better, frankly. But if you come back a year from now, it may not be the end of the story. And I think that's been the case when we look back over the last several years. Gold has, go back 200 years if you want to do some research. The stock market, and you mentioned this earlier, Lee, and it's spot on. The stock market has been the greatest engine of growth of any investment we could want. Real estate is pretty close. It's up there too, but it's typically stocks and real estate, and then bonds, and then gold way down on the list.
That's right.
And as far as cryptocurrencies, if cryptocurrencies didn't work in this environment, when will they work? Weren't they supposed to be the safe haven when everything gets
horrible? And
they went straight down. So, you know, again, do they have merit as a currency? I don't know, maybe someday, but I think you can't call them a currency even, because no currency should move that much, right? Imagine if your dollar bills were going up and down by 30% in a day, you know, to where you literally, that's what it's like, right?
You're going to buy
something and it costs 30% more the next day. Who would want that as a currency?
That's
so don't
right.
call them cryptocurrencies. They're really, if you want to call them a different asset class, that's fine, but they have not proven themselves yet.
No, they haven't. And there's a tremendous number of people that have, you know, invested $1,000, $5,000, $10,000 in Bitcoin, and it becomes zero. I mean, it becomes worth nothing, or 50 or 75% less. So we are not recommending cryptocurrencies on the show today, folks.
No. And just to be clear, I think in your podcast, probably similar to mine, our goal is to give people information.
That's right.
And so we want to give information that's backed up by stats and facts. And so we don't recommend anything. It's really a place to start your research. And again, if you want to do research on the stock market, the bond market, don't just go back the last 5 years. Go back the last 100 years and see what bonds did, what stocks did, and look at, you know, companies produce revenue, they produce earnings, they give dividends to you. And so there's a reason why you get paid a premium to own those. But because of the transparency and the liquidity of them, they're going to move faster than maybe your house. But your house value is changing. It's just nobody sends you a statement every day to tell you what it's worth. And so people tend to believe that even real estate's much safer than stocks. And I would disagree with that.
I would too.
I think 08's a great example of that.
Yeah, you know, and I was saying to my parents, we were talking on the phone yesterday, and it occurred to me that the United States economy, of course, built on capitalism, which some of our politicians like to make a bad word out of these days. But here's something to notice about the American economy. We've got companies out there with factories who can really, in a very short period of time, turn those things around and start making something else in those factories. So we're seeing distillers of alcohol making hand sanitizer, right? We're seeing mattress companies and textile mills making masks and gowns for hospitals. So what we're seeing is our economy has this resiliency in it because it's not funded by the state, because people have an interest in making money when there's money to be made and also serving their fellow man, right? The United States economy is so resilient and so powerful when left alone, really, that it will help us climb out of a crisis like this. So how would you use that fact to encourage people right now in terms of what the future might hold? It might be different than we've thought about before, but what does that make you feel when I talk about that kind of stuff, Carl?
Well, we look at the automakers back during the wars. What did they do? They shifted to making tanks, right? And then actually supercharged the economy.
Yep.
We're fortunate for two reasons that this is happening in 2020. Number one, we're fortunate because of the fact that we are primarily the U.S. as a service economy.
Yep.
So we're not manufacturing as much as we used to, and that some people would argue that's a negative. In this case, I think it's a positive because a lot of us, myself, haven't missed a beat. I still communicate with my clients via technology. I am still doing what I always do for them. They're still paying me. So I'm still doing things without being disrupted. And I think there's a lot of people who are able to do that. Now, again, there are some sectors, restaurants, movie theaters, that are really getting hurt here.
Yep.
But to your point, whenever something like this happens, go look at the companies that came out of the last time we went through a financial crisis. The companies that were born in 08 and 09, you'd be amazed the list of those companies that are very large, successful companies. So it spurs people to say, what else can I be doing right now? And to your point, companies are flipping the switch and saying, where's their need? And they shift and they use whatever they have to go fill that need. And it's a great thing to look at. The other thing is, I mentioned 2020, again, the technology. You and I can record podcasts in a very sophisticated way. This would have taken a massive studio for this to be done a few years ago. And again, I had a meeting this morning with our staff. We have 39 employees. All 39 employees were on one screen and we were communicating.
Wow.
Couldn't have done that even a few years ago. So,
that's right.
You know, there's a lot of interesting things going on. And it will cause, though, and you know this, it's going to cause some people to shift what they do for a living. You know, after the financial crisis, Detroit's been decimated.
Yep.
Unfortunately, for somebody that says, my grandfather worked building cars and my father built cars, that kid may not build cars anymore. And it's the same thing on this side. We've owned this restaurant for 80 years. Some restaurants are going to go to business and they're going to look to say, maybe I need to do something else. And again, what I said earlier about healthcare, they may be in some type of healthcare service business, right? We don't know, but that's what happens during these times is there's a pivot.
That's right. So give us, I told you about 30 minutes. We're right at that. I appreciate your time, but give us maybe just a few seconds of encouragement for what you would say to people out there to help them relax a little bit and take some hope out of this situation.
Well, again, there's a lot of new things about this sell-off, but most people don't realize this. JP Morgan did a study that goes all the way back to 1980. And every year, on average, the stock market pulls back about 15% on average at any time during the year. And this is a little more than that. But again, with sharp sell-offs come sharp rallies. What the good part about this, too, is that there's areas that have, when there's forced selling, as I mentioned earlier, where everything goes down together, that's where the opportunity is.
That's right.
There's certain funds and stocks and so forth that have fallen just because your neighbor sold them, not because the value is really worse. Right. And I think we're at that fork in the road where, again, there's some great opportunities and there's some areas that maybe you do want to avoid. But that's why I think you got to start being a little selective. But at the end of the day, if you squint your eyes and go look at the stock market, even during the Great Depression, you made money. And in fact, another interesting stat, and I'll leave you with this, is that the stock market has never had in the last 120 years a down 20-year period.
That's right.
Ever, including, so in other words, if you would have bought at the peak before the Great Depression, the stock market went down about 90% during the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. If you would have bought at the peak and ridden it down 90% and just held on, you came back 20 years later, you didn't make a lot. But the point was, nobody's ever lost money for 20 years. And so the longer you can be an investor here, these are opportunities.
Again, that's right.
I can't tell you what the market's going to do over the next month or 6 months or even a year, but stats are on our side for 10, 15, 20 years. And it's very exciting. And again, for somebody who's still adding to their accounts, which is probably the majority of people listening, you got to take advantage of it. And again, it's about time frames, but take advantage of it selectively. And I'm not saying, again, that you blindly just go throw your money in there without doing any research, but there's a lot of opportunity out there, and we should be fortunate to have that.
That's right. Carl Eggers, so great to have you today. I appreciate you.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. God bless. Hey, that was a good conversation with Carl Eggers. I hope you got something out of that. Now, again, if you have been furloughed, laid off, if you lost your job in this, we are really praying for you. This particular episode is more about how you handle your retirement funds, your investments, and all of that during times of economic stress. And the takeaway is this, from my perspective, what I learned from Carl here is the United States economy, the United States stock market in particular, has been the most resilient and reliable investment vehicle in the history of modern humanity over the last 200 years. And so we've been through rough times before. We've been through financial crises, stock market crashes, world wars, Great Depressions, and the market always lands on its feet. So now would not be the time to panic, sell everything, you know, buy gold, buy Bitcoin. None of those things would be the wise thing to do right now. The wise thing to do would be to keep dollar cost averaging, keep sticking to your guns with your investment strategy. Maybe pay attention to the markets a little more closely than you normally do, but don't panic, because this too, my friend, shall pass. So learn some things from Carl. Do some research, pay attention, but hang in there and have a little faith, because this economy is going to turn around. The big difference between what's happening now, in my opinion, and what happened in 2008 and 2009 is that in 2008 and 2009, the underlying economy was weak. And so when the housing system crashed, the underlying economy was not strong. It was not on its feet. This economy, President Trump's economy, is fundamentally strong. He set a lot of things right, and this dip will be short-lived. I'm predicting that this will come back pretty quickly, so don't panic. Don't freak out. Hold on to your hat and your overall investment strategy. We'll get through this together. So I hope you enjoyed talking to Carl, and most importantly, keep on believing, praying, and pulling for the United States and the world, because we're all in this together. And the fact that this virus is happening to all of us at the same time gives us a little opportunity to remember that every human being on the planet is facing this thing at the same time. So count your blessings, be grateful, don't panic, and be smart. And as always, start today. Hey, thanks for listening. The Dr. Lee Warren Podcast is brought to you by I've Seen the End of You, A Neurosurgeon's Look at Faith, Doubt, and the Things We Think We Know, available everywhere books are sold around the world, from Waterbrook, Penguin Random House. Hey, I'm at Dr. Lee Warren on Instagram and Twitter. Lisa is at Lisa D. Warren on Instagram and Twitter. We're on Facebook. My newsletter is on wleewarrenmd.com. We love to connect. We love to hear from you. We're praying for you. And if you got something you want us to pray about, please hit me up through the socials or the newsletter and let us know, and we will pray for you. Please pray for us. We're all in this together. I look forward to talking to you next time. We got a lot of exciting episodes coming up, so we'll see you soon. God bless. Have a great day.